previously on Wisco Weekly.
Consumers of cars, whether we own them or lease them or whatever, their perception of what their car means to them is changing quite a lot. It used to be a possession which had many other roles in people's lives. It was about status and convenience and freedom and all of those things. But that was just about around the car itself. What we see now is that people expect their car to be kind of a mobile office, a mobile conference room. They expect to be completely connected with the outside world, whether it's because they're streaming music or listening to your podcast as they drive, etc. So a lot more emphasis has swung around into what it means to be inside the car.
And on this episode,
how is what you're going to, you know, you're asking them going to help or potentially compromise, you know, what they're doing? Is there something in it for them? Either personally or their company? How do you create, you know, how do you get to a 1+1=3 kind of situation?
This is Wisco Weekly, an automotive business podcast sharing the voices of automakers, automotive retailers, and transportation professionals who are driving and shaping the future of automotive.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Chicken brown, chicken brown, go!
Listeners, welcome to another episode of Wisco Weekly. Had a nice little drive up from Orange County to Marina Del Rey, California to record with my guest today. And it's not a fun episode, and it's not an entertaining episode if we don't also have our transportation correspondent, Rudy Solo, in attendance. So, Rudy, forget how are you? How did you get here?
I drove.
You drove. So for someone who maybe doesn't have a war against cars, you have a war against traffic, you put a car on the road for someone like me who wants to get up here as quickly as possible to avoid traffic, you essentially blocked, or you added another 30 minutes to my drive up here. Thank you.
I did, and the reason why is because there's not a real viable transportation option up to Marina Del Rey or Venice as of right now, and I don't think there's any plans in the future for that.
Well, why don't you find some people to develop some infrastructure, that's what you specialize in, and make my drive more pleasant, please?
I'm trying to do.
Well, listeners, you're tuned into Wisco Weekly, where we share the voices of automakers, automotive retailers, and transportation professionals who are driving and shaping the future of automotive. And today's guest is going to be a great treat for us all, because it's certainly a topic and perhaps an educational lesson that we can all take as a way to do our parts, and hopefully, if you want to be a change maker and you you want to know how to work with automakers and transportation companies, you're going to want to listen in on today's guest. I love the prior experiences of our guest today. While he was born and raised in the Midwest, and specifically Ohio, he desired to get out of Dodge and explore. His journeys include stints in Los Angeles, Argentina, Japan, Taiwan, Boston, and Silicon Valley. Now, as CEO and founder of Connected Travel, a connected vehicle platform and application services company, he finds himself back in the City of Angels. With more than 25 years experience within the technology, entertainment, and automotive sectors, his mission is to enhance and optimize the travel experiences in cars. In support of this mission, he and his company have partnered with Honda Innovations to introduce the Honda Dream Drive, the automotive industry's first integrated driver and passenger infotainment, commerce, services, and rewards dashboard within the vehicle environment. We'll hear more about this soon. As an undergrad of Boston U and a graduate of Stanford Business School, my guest has been exposed to the culture and technology of some of the biggest and brightest companies, including American Greetings, Vivendi, Microsoft, Nokia, and he even served as an entrepreneur in residence at Nokia Growth Partners, the venture capital arm of Nokia. Here to share greater insight on partnering with automakers, men, women, and children, please welcome to the show, Mr. Brian Biniak.
Thank you.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm excited about being on the show.
Well, thank you, and we're certainly happy that you are here and will be dropping some knowledge on how you and your experiences and your current company are able to partner with automakers. Certainly, you guys are doing some great things and some really cool things at that. We'll get to hear more about that. Before we begin, though, how can people follow you, Brian?
That's a good question. I don't have anything official. I have a company website. I have a LinkedIn page, and that's it for now.
But, boom, there you go. So listeners, I'll put in the episode notes some of his contact info.
You're not using the Twitter?
I am not using the Twitter.
Is that a purposeful choice, or I'm curious. I'm fascinated by that.
You know what? And maybe it's the incorrect perception of Twitter, but my view of it is that once you start, you got to keep going. If you are asking people to follow you, and if I'm not going to maintain it, then it doesn't seem like it's a good use of other people's time to look for me to do something that I'm not doing.
Well, Brian, so I thought one of the things that we could lead off with was you definitely have some unique experiences. And again, for someone who was born and raised in Ohio, that eventually traveled outside of the Midwest and had some international experience. So perhaps you can maybe shed some light on, you know, how did a kid who was raised in Ohio have the desire to travel, and specifically to countries like Japan and China, and what did you learn out of those experiences?
My first international experience, I went to this all boys Jesuit high school in Toledo, Ohio.
We all went to an all boys high school.
Although ours was Franciscan. Those Jesuits, you know, they're a lot nicer than our high school, Dennis. But hey, we already have a kinship right there.
There you go. And everybody had to do a senior project where they did an internship, and so. Most people worked with an accountant, a lawyer, a doctor, or something along those lines. I had actually attended a seminary, believe it or not, my freshman year of high school. And so some of the guys that I had become friends with got stationed in Cebu City in the Philippines. Hmm. So I decided to do my internship in the Philippines. So I went out and I raised some money from the Knights of Columbus, the Filipino Doctors Association, and a bunch of other groups. I had one of those single mom families, and I got on an airplane by myself and I flew to ultimately Cebu City and lived there for a month and did my internship in the Philippines. And it was kind of a crazy time because I got there a couple of weeks after Marcos had exited the country, so it was kind of a scary time. And then, literally the month after I left, the MPA blew up the central market where we would go a couple of times a week for food. So, which is pretty scary to think about. You know, coming from Ohio, obviously things like that don't happen very often. So that was my first adventure overseas, and then I did. I did a semester abroad in Brazil during college, and then I went to work for American Greetings. Actually, before that, I worked for a video game company called Harmonix Music Systems that created Guitar Hero and Rock Band, and ended up getting based in Japan for a couple of years, and then decided that before I was 30, I wanted to be my CEO of my own company, and I had an opportunity in Taiwan to start something, so I moved to Taiwan, and then later I got a job with American Greetings, and they put me in Paris for 6 months. So I kind of just wandered a bit along the way.
Now, so with all these different experiences, then is this the impetus and the creation of Connected Travel then, or
it was actually. Related to my family. When I was at Nokia, we had a new tablet that was coming out that was a cellular tablet. AT&T was the first customer for that, and AT&T gave us a set of parameters for building some showcase or hero applications for that device. One, it had to target the family. Two, it needed to have a companion experience, meaning that a smartphone and a tablet would work together in some way. They could work independent, but they needed to work together. Another thing was that it needed to, again, drive cellular versus Wi-Fi connectivity. So when we started looking at that, the only place we could think of, and this is late 2010, early 2011, was the car. And at that time, there was not a lot of Wi-Fi connectivity in cars, and most people did not have it. You know, they weren't using hotspots and things like that. Or like, all right, here's a place where you can do that. And then on the family side, we were talking to DreamWorks Animation at the time, and they had a new movie coming out, How to Train Your Dragon 2, where the lead character flies around and maps undiscovered parts of this imaginary world, which seemed like it fit well because Nokia at the time owned HERE, the mapping company, and so location was a KSP for us, also contextual content and imaging. But we improvised on imaging and did something with augmented reality. And part of that, the idea was that typically when kids are in the car and a parent gives them from a device, they disconnect. Right? The parents focus on driving, the kids go into their device, they put their head in their lap, and they stop talking to each other. Like, okay, this is not connected. This is the opposite. It's disconnected time in the car. And if you add up all the time that parents and kids spend together in the car a year, and if you just assume the worst case scenario that it is completely disconnected, ignoring each other, you know, it's thousands of hours that you've lost with your kids in the car. And so we're like, we need to actually do the opposite. How do we connect kids to, you know, their parents and that in LA that are driving them all over the place? And the other thing is when they get to their destination, you know, the parents have to get the devices back from their kids and say, okay, you're done. And like, but I'm right in the middle of, I'm really into what I'm doing. So they ignore each other and then they fight. So we're like, well, gosh, you know, if the car knows where you're going, it should do a soft wind down of the game and basically say, you know, minutes before you get there, you know, here's how you did, you know, and then, you know, that way, here's what you've accomplished, you know, and that way kind of, instead of just shutting it down or taking the device away. So for us, connected travel means how do you bring travel and adventure to the everyday commute? Because connected commute is not a very interesting name, right? If I tell you we're going to go on a commute, you're like, you know, it's like your mom taking you shopping. You're not interested in doing that.
I think the word commute is a dirty, dirty word.
It is.
In fact, I hate it. I hate that word. I use it as my reason for not driving. So I'm glad
you brought
that up.
But if I say travel, you're like, beautiful. We're going on vacation.
Absolutely.
Right? It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good time.
It's
and so
true.
People look forward to that. And so just by the words that you choose, so that's where kind of connected travel concept came from, is how do we make, you know, everyday travel in the car. Plus then it impacts the car too. Like kids today, they don't necessarily want a car because the time that they spend in the car is not the best time of the day. They put a seatbelt on, they tune out, they're fighting with their parents, they're checking out. And it's just like, I'd rather not be in the vehicle. And so that needs to change too for car companies.
I love how you're looking at this. I mean, again, it's almost like whatever the byproduct is of your thinking, it's going to be great because you are basing it initially off these, you know, off the family experience. And at the core of me in terms of values, like family is definitely, like, if not the first, the second thing on my list that is the most important thing to me. So I love the fact that that's how you kind of are looking at it. That's how you're thinking about it. And as a byproduct, that's how you're then designing the product and operating the business in that sense. What if now we start to then look at, so, you know, again, thank you for the explanation of how you came up with connected travel. So let's start to discuss how then you were able to take your idea, put it down on paper into something that's more meaningful, into something that's more of a business operation, and then how you're able to now start to partner with Honda. I'm going to say Honda at large, but, you know, we'll get down to talking about Honda Innovations. But where did you go from the concept to now trying to partner with an automaker?
Well, there was some innovation work that happened between, you know, that first application experience, which
I'm sorry to interrupt you. So real quick, let's talk dates here. So I know that Connected Travel started in 2016, but
right. So the Dragon's Adventure World Explorer, which was this first game that we built, was created in 2012, and it was actually a pretty interesting experience because what we did is we took all of this data. From the vehicle, telematics data, telemetry data from the phone, mapping data, Foursquare social data, factual POI data. We took weather data from the Weather Channel. We took data from FlightAware, and that data told us about what was happening in the world at that moment in time. And then we took and built a Unity rendering engine, and then we were able to, as people were driving, they would look at their device. It would create a whole 3D, you know. Or 2D kind of animated world that you would be driving through that would animate. You'd look out the window and you'd see, you know, the ocean, and in the game it would be the ocean. You'd see the road, but when there was traffic it would become a muddy road and it would slow down. When you looked up in the air outside the car, you would see an airplane. Inside the game, you would see a different dragon mapped to a United Airlines plane versus a United Airlines or American Airlines or whatever. And so you could explore the world around you, and that was your game space. So we took that. We had an opportunity to work with Gogo, and we built a next-generation flight tracker concept with them based upon all the work we were doing with the dragons in the air and the airplanes. And then we had an opportunity. DreamWorks was working with Royal Caribbean, and I had a chance meeting with a guy from a company called Marine Instruments out of Spain that had the largest network of commercial fishing buoys, sonar buoys in the world for tuna fishing. So we're like, well, that would be cool. Why don't we plug that in? And then we could render under the ocean ecologies of fish and landscapes and take tidal data and all these things. And so we built this digital glass bottom boat. So when you're on the, you know, a cruise ship and you see nothing but blue, you know, and steel, then you could actually explore the world around you. And then we ended up plugging in some beacons so you can do things indoor and outdoor. So we had land, air, and sea, then indoor and outdoor where we could render all of these worlds. And we got introduced to, randomly, I sent a guy at Visa's innovation group a LinkedIn connection, and he responded, and he thought we had met somewhere, and I just said, yes, we did on LinkedIn.
Lying is a good thing to do when you're in business. It's very important. I mean, I probably do it all the time.
I just didn't say where we met. We just said, yes, we've met now.
And you meet a lot of people. How do you know you didn't meet them?
Yeah,
as a lawyer, that's the way you need to answer those types of questions in the future.
Yeah, yes. But furthermore, too, you know, with social media and specifically LinkedIn, you know, we're always like, what, 3 degrees, 4 degrees away from each other. So you probably would have been in the same location.
It is true.
Define the word meet. Yes. I mean, that's the whole point.
Well, I never said we met. I just sent him an invitation to connect.
Yeah.
His assumption was we met. And then from there, it took us down two interesting paths. One is we got introduced to Marriott, and we took that same concepting that we did. We built this AR view of the city of Bethesda, Maryland. We did a 3D model of it, and we took Visa's real-time transaction data, and we were able to create a map of consumption across the city, which is a measure of popularity and is also a measure of presence. And then we plugged in Facebook, TripAdvisor, OpenTable, and Yelp, and took star ratings, reviews, and likes, and posts, and all that, and fused it and created a next-generation rating system. And then we plugged in traffic data and weather data and things like that. And ultimately, it became a next generation concierge service. So you could see a city in real time, you know, and you can go where there's people or away from where there's people. And it validated, you know, a lot of people think concierges are on the, you know, getting spiffed. And so you're not really getting valid, you know, recommendations. And we're, you know, in this case, consumers speak with their wallet. So that kind of validated some of those things. So kind of went down that path. And then we met Honda Innovations. And they had, in 2015, they built something called Dream Drive. And what they did is they took an Oculus Rift and they plugged it into the telematics of the vehicle. They created a very simple environment that was a first-person point of view. You put on your glasses, and you were basically in a car on a racetrack. And it was fascinating for me because when I sat down, you put on the glasses, and all of a sudden you feel the car. And, you know, and this is, and I'm like, do you have haptics in here? Do you have something in here? And it was no. It's just like, wow, changing your sensory kind of perspective changes the feeling. You also hear things that you wouldn't otherwise hear in the car. Which, you know, and they were about to kill this project. And so I'm like, you know, if you give me, you know, access to the data here, some of these APIs, I can plug it into our platform that we've been building, and you can drive anywhere in the world. So in a week, we came back, and they were out of the parking lot, and they were able to drive anywhere, and we opened up the entire world for them. And so we solved that problem for them. Speaking of domains, I went online. It turns out dreamdrive.com was available. I bought it for them and gave it to them, and they reimbursed me for it. But, you know, I ended up buying that domain for
them.
Hold on.
You bought dreamdrive.com, and they just, quote unquote, reimbursed you for it?
Yes.
I got to pry a little further. Is that, like, reimbursed you $8 for it?
No. It cost some real money.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, not a huge amount of money, but it was, you know, in the thousands of dollars. It wasn't...
Okay, fair. All right.
I have never had a domain name that I've purchased ever be worth $1,000. So if anybody would like any domain names, just call me. I'm way cheaper than that. Just hit me on the Twitter.
So we ended up, you know, that's kind of where we started. We solved a problem for them and showed them. And, you know, we didn't charge them for any of this work. We just went in and said, we just did it. Give it these. And that opened the door, right? In the meantime, one of my partners from DreamWorks, we got invited to speak at TU Automotive show conference in Detroit, which happens in June every year. And we talked about the work that we had done with DreamWorks. And clearly we have a very different perspective on how you use car data and what you can do in the car. And somebody had come to us and said, you know, we think what you're doing is interesting and how you make driving fun and using data. We're talking to this company called USAA about doing something with behavior-based insurance. We'd love to talk to you about maybe partnering to do something. So they came to us and said, hey, we want to change drivers' behaviors. USAA is a little bit different than all of the other auto insurance companies out there. They want to keep their drivers. They don't want to churn them, you know, because you have to qualify to be a USAA member. You have to be active military or direct family member or veteran and direct family member. And so those customers or those members, they want to say, hey, we love having you as a customer. How can we help make you safer for your own good, for your family, for everybody around you? And we said, all right, well, that's interesting. To change behavior, you have to understand people's behavior. And understand it, it's not just that somebody speeds or how often they speed, but the context. So then we made this whole proposal to them, and they said, sounds great. And it was at that moment in time, they're like, okay, well, let's launch. We need a company to do this. So I left Nokia Growth Partners and started Connected Travel. And so we actually started our first company project in 2016 was to build this behavior-based insurance platform. And what the platform is able to do is I can put a little software on your phone in the most comprehensive, kind of complete way. It has the ability to capture all of the day-to-day driving routines of people. And through that process, I then can learn things like your start and end point. Which means that I can learn where you live and where you work. If I learn your work, then I can learn your work hours and when you go to work and return. And then I mean,
this is kind of similar to, like, you know, every time I get in my car and I drive to work on my iPhone, it tells me whatever, you know, you have 12 minutes till you get to work. And then when I go from work to home at about whatever, 5 o'clock, right, my iPhone is telling me, hey, going home is going to be 13 minutes, right? So that's kind of what we're talking about.
Exactly. Here. So I learn, I can, you know, the system can learn your work hours when you're early on time or late for work. But most people aren't just driving around in circles. They're going to different places. And the majority of us go to, we have routines. So all of a sudden now you're able to calendarize all of these things and say, all right, here's all the places that this person goes on a routine basis, and here's the occasional kind of random stuff. And then from within that, then the routes that they would take, how long it takes them, how traffic and weather impacts them. And then within that, where do you speed, and when do you pick up your phone, and heartbreak, and all of the kind of good and bad behaviors. Are you, because then it's in the context, is it because you're late? Is it because, you know, you're always, it's never when you have your kids in the car, it's only when you're driving to work, or it's because your family wants you, you're always late coming home from work, so you're, you want to get home. And then what we did is we built a whole points and reward system. With that, you know, we have had a lot of success. We were able to get people to reduce their speeding in the first year by 43% consistently and sustained. We were able to get people to reduce their phone handling by 40%. We were able to get people to reduce their heartbreaking by 13%. We were able to get 80% of the people to go into the app every day and engage. And what's interesting is this, just like a athlete would look at their sports scores, their stats, you can look at your own driver stats, and you can get, and all of a sudden you like see yourself in a completely different way than you ever have. Like, you'll know that you're, you know, we had this one person who picked up their phone 40 times in a 20-minute drive during, and she's like, "Oh, absolutely, I never do that." And we're like,
you might, I was gonna say, of course it's a she.
No, I mean, that's not very nice. You should not say that. This sounds amazing, because I've, for years, since I've ever met my wife, I've been trying to prove to her that I'm actually an excellent driver. Mm-hmm. And now this sounds like the data that I can that I can prove her wrong. That's an ongoing thing between
she
and I.
You can go to the Apple App Store, Google Play. You can download HyperDrive Rewards, and you can check it out. And you know, we found things like more people speed when they're going eight, or use their phone when they're going 80 miles an hour than when they're going 8, because they feel like, oh, there's not enough cars on the road, which I can speed. And it's exactly the opposite. That's when you can cause the most damage to yourself and people around you. So there's all of these things that you learn about people's behaviors in that process. And so it was that platform that we built around behavior and safety that we introduced the whole concept of this passenger platform in the car, and where we're able to learn about people. There you go. And so back from my days at Nokia, when we were working with all of these brands and application developers around the world, we reached out to a handful of companies and said, we're going to explore the future of infotainment in the car and what that might be, you know, as we move to a day of autonomy, autonomous vehicles. What are people going to do in the car that they have all of these freedoms that they didn't have before? That being said, we're all passengers today. It's just that nobody focuses on the passenger, which is fascinating, because there's something like 225 million drivers, licensed drivers in the world, but there's 350 million plus passengers. And when you think about the driver, you always start with this list of, here's all the things you can't do because of distracted driving, and this is what's left. So there's a lot of limits around innovation, but there's no limits when it comes to the passenger.
Is there any way that you can build in a reward for listeners of this podcast? Can you please give them some stuff? Because we're really trying to get our listenership up really high. What can you do for us?
Funny you say that.
That's actually interesting. That's a good question.
I have to. We actually, funny enough, did that for radio.
Because iHeart Radio, or just radio in general?
We were working with iHeart, Entercom, Univision, Beasley, local media, and so. Once we plugged into the telematic systems of the vehicle and HMI systems, we then had access to the radio data. So we knew when the radio was on and off. We knew the station frequency, the station ID, the station presets. We knew when people were changing the stations. So that would then tell us interesting information. And then we're like, well, that's interesting. Let's talk to the radio broadcasters And a long time ago, I did some stuff with interactive television and learned that everything that's on TV is sitting on a server before it actually airs. So they called it electronic news production service. So I figured that there was something like that for radio, and they have what they call program automation systems. So everything that you're going to hear on the radio is already scheduled. So it's just sitting there ready to light up. Now, radio is a little bit different because it's live. So things kind of, they might get delayed a little bit, or they might show up a little bit earlier. But all the songs that are going to air, even like, you know, they don't have teleprompter like scripts like TV does, but they have kind of the subject matter that the people are going to talk about is sitting there, and then all the ads are they going to air. So we're able to plug into these systems, which basically means we know what people are going to hear before they hear it. So we applied rewards to listening to radio.
Well, so like when you're tapping into the telematic system to track how people are, you know, listening to the radio, does that also include things like Bluetooth then, or Sirius radio, or you know those different audio elements?
Yes, you have the ability to do that. Now, there's certain, when it comes to things like Sirius, it depends on the commercial agreement between the manufacturer, the auto OEM, and Sirius in terms of data access. Also, obviously, there's your AT&T has probably a 90% plus or minus market share in terms of Wi-Fi, LTE connectivity in the car. So that's another interesting data source. So what we've done is we've just started capturing more and more different data sets and started to connect them and to see what kinds of experiences that we can create for, in this case, it was passengers. Kind of goes back to what we started with, where we built games out of data, and now it's creating all of these kind of infotainment and then commerce. So we added in Fandango, and then we added in Atom Tickets. So we were able to apply, you get points for watching movie trailers. And then you get points for, those points can be rewarded for, you know, purchasing movie tickets and discounts and concessions and all of those other things. So these are things that you do in the car every day, but you don't get anything for, right? Like you go on an airplane and you get miles, you get all these rewards for flying on an airplane. It's tiered silver, gold, and platinum and whatever. And the more you fly, the more value you create for yourself, but that doesn't exist in a car. You get, you know, points for staying in a hotel and you get tiered status there. You get retailers, but nothing in a car. So that's basically what we've built.
It's genius. I love it. People are already doing this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone's using their phones. Everyone's seeing all these advertisements and everything. Let me just ask a question.
Yeah.
A lot of people say that we are overly addicted to our phones.
Yeah.
That we're using them already too much and, you know, we need to break away. Could rewarding more use of watching these things compound the problem? I mean, have you ever thought about that? I'm just curious. I mean, I get the other argument that people are already doing it, but I'm just curious.
But you can apply points to pretty much anything, right? So it's not just it's driving your car, miles driven, it's time in the car. I can give points to listening to things, audiobooks, the radio, podcasts.
Got it. Okay.
We, you know, through the focus group testing that we've done with parents and with auto insurance, that we know, you know, one of the biggest distractions in cars is people leaving late. So how do you get your passengers to get into the car early? How do you get people to put on their seatbelts? How do you get people to stop fighting and screaming with each other?
Let me ask you a really quick question on that point. Let's say an Uber or a Lyft driver, right? They're one of their banes of existence. They're always sometimes waiting up to 4 to 5 minutes for their passengers to come in. Is there a way to reward those passengers in an Uber or a Lyft?
Sure. There's a way for drivers to reward passengers. There's a way for passengers to reward drivers.
That's brilliant. You know why? Because one of the things that I discovered over the weekend in taking an Uber was like, there's such a new standard for ratings now, right? Because once before, everyone always had the 5-star rating, and all of a sudden it's like, 2.5 stars, that probably meant that, you know, like that was almost like a pass or fail, right? 2.5, that's a fail. Hell, 4 stars is probably a fail. But now, well, some of the things that I see on Uber now, it's like, look, if you have a 4.2, which is really good 5 years ago, that's like a fail now, because most Uber drivers, for instance, they typically have 4.8, 4.9. And so that whole rating system is so skewed that I was thinking you almost need to introduce another type of element as a way to judge or, you know, a criteria by which you can rate an Uber driver to see, okay, actually how well are they? Oh, look, these guys show up on time, or this Uber driver shows up on time all the time. That's a good rating system right there now, or that introduces a new factor. You know, one of the things though, Brian, too, a lot of the things that I'm hearing about, and you know, even though that we wanted to talk about initially partnering with the automaker, what I kind of like about what we've evolved it to be is you have certainly demonstrated the ability to just partner with other companies. I mean, you've mentioned a whole list of companies you've partnered with. So to that end, when you are partnering with these companies, can you maybe share with us, you know, when you go into these meetings or when you're designing these partnership agreements, how do you look at pitching a Fandango or a Visa or a DC Comics? Like, how are you bringing these companies into the mix? Like, you're having so much success bringing these companies in to your platform. What are you doing?
Part of it is I'm 51 years old, so I have a lot of connections, you know, in the years of work that I've been doing. And that's super important. You know, you never know where people are going to land. People that have worked for me, people I've worked with, people that I've worked for. You know, just a good example. Back in my 30s, I was working for this mobile applications platform company. Back in the days of monophonic ringtones and black and white buddy icons on phones and stuff like that, you know, Snake was the only game you could get on the phone.
It's a great game, though.
Awesome.
I mean,
game.
That's the bad.
I still play it until this day.
You know, there was a kid who came in, just got out of college, who, you know, interviewed for a job, and we were looking for, you know, somebody who had more experience, and you know, it didn't work out. But later, this guy became the chief digital officer for Nike.
My gosh.
You know, and so, you know, somebody I was probably a good 15 plus years older, you know, than at the time. And so that's one of those important things that every single person you meet in your professional journey, you never know where they're going to land. And at the time, they may not seem like they have something to offer you. You may have something to offer them, but it just has to be an incredibly positive experience, because that is the difference between somebody who can get something done, you know, throughout their career, and somebody who ends up, you know, backing themselves into a corner.
So we're kind of talking about the network effect then.
Yes.
In terms of then your ability to network, I mean, is this something that you've met these people, and as you've gone through your career and as they've gone through their career, it's like, oh, hey, on LinkedIn, or hey, you know, I heard from a friend of a friend that this guy that I know from way back when is now working for this company. How do you maintain those relationships that, you know, perhaps started 5-10 years ago?
I think, you know, there's some simple things. Like, I'm not a big Facebook person per se, but
social media.
Just between LinkedIn and Facebook, you know, it lists people's birthdays. Mm. So just wishing people happy birthday that you know in your network, where you have a reasonable, you know.
Interestingly enough, it's funny that you bring that up. I'm much more comfortable saying happy birthday on Facebook, mm-hmm. but I never do it on LinkedIn. I don't know why. I guess it's that cone of professional versus friendly that I've always had. Do you not see it that way?
I don't use LinkedIn to do that. But, you know, as an example, there's somebody that we're working with right now at a car company in Germany, and LinkedIn said it was her birthday. I'm like, I'm not going to send it through LinkedIn, but I send it through text.
Yeah, that's what I do that. Yeah. Through LinkedIn, I don't, but I will personally send somebody a text.
So, but, you know, and those are those things that way you're, you know, because most of the time, you know, you're not always asking somebody from something or selling something or have opportunities, but just having some kind of consistent connection, thoughtful connection is good, because you don't want to waste people's time. You know, I think going back to the whole Twitter thing that you were mentioning earlier, people keeping up to date on what you're doing. If you're doing interesting things, they want to stay connected.
I think one of the things that you said that it doesn't get talked about as much anymore. I feel like maybe a few years ago it was more talked about, but there are times where, you know, I'm sure you've experienced it a lot. I'm sure we've all experienced a lot where people hit us up just to ask. They're always asking for something, and it's like, look, I helped you out the first time or the second time, and it's like, look, you're overreaching now with all these different requests, and perhaps you're not realizing, you know, the fact that I think sometimes what ends up happening is I tend to feel guilty when people ask me for something and I don't respond to them in an hour or a day, because it's like, look, I want to be thoughtful, I want to help. But then all of a sudden you have somebody that's contacting you 3, 4, 5, 6 times, and it's like, okay, forget it. You're, what you've basically said was that, you know, sometimes you just have to outreach to say happy birthday without asking for something in return.
Yeah, I mean, and that's networking 101. I mean, you know, you can't always be asking. I have an Achilles heel, and the Achilles heel is whenever anybody asks for help, I like kind of drop everything that I'm doing. In order to be successful, sometimes you just got to learn how to say no, obviously. I mean, and you must do that sometimes.
Yes. So, and that, it took me a long time to figure that. I said yes to everybody.
Right.
I don't believe that you should ask for something for everything you could do. Sometimes it's just like, you know what, just let me help you out. Also, that means that if you don't ask for something in return, you're not asking for payment or things like that. That enables you to get in and out relatively quickly. I also have just a personal policy to try to give more than I take. I think that's just good from a karma standpoint, connecting other companies and people and stuff like that, and creating that kind of, you know, success around you. But the hardest thing is always to know what your limits are. I've got 3 kids, married, you know, I'm super busy, you know, with all of supporting the kids and the family life. And then obviously doing a startup is, so there's not a lot of time left. So I've got to be careful that I don't overcommit, because that's worse. I think when you tell somebody you're going to do something, you get engaged, and then you can't deliver on those things.
Right. It's the worst. Absolutely.
Well, so let me put you in a little of a, maybe not, it's not a tougher situation, but again, it's like you've already mentioned that one of the things that, you know, helps in terms of networking is not always asking for something, but there are the times where you are going to have to ask for something from somebody, and maybe you're asking for something, you're asking something of someone that you haven't talked to in 5, 10 years, and when you did, it was because you spent 6 months together working at the same company, and you know the name, you know a little bit of the backstory, but again, you haven't connected in a long time. How do you advise someone to make an ask of somebody, make a business ask of somebody when you haven't connected with them in such a long time?
Well, I think there's a couple of things you've got to, first of all, you need to kind of catch up to the extent that you can on them, you know, and that's where LinkedIn or Facebook or some of these other things, you know, what has this person been up to? What are they doing? What's their job? How is what you're going to, you know, you're asking them going to help or potentially compromise, you know, what they're doing? Is there something in it for them, either personally or their company? How do you create, you know, how do you get to a 1+1=3 kind of situation? Or how do you minimize, you know, the effort that you're asking them for to, you know, and maybe even, you know, what are you going to give them in return? You know, what's the barter there? Or even offering to pay them for their time or, you know, something. You know, again, it's not just going in there and saying, can you do this? But I think, you know, typically also you have a relationship, you have they know you as somebody who they can always contact as well if they need something. So that's the relationship that you've built up with them over time, is somebody who is always looking out for them, putting, you know, as opposed to, you know, yourself. And I think, you know, as a colleague, as a peer, as a manager, I've always tried to build a brand, you know, not proactively, but just, you
know, a personal brand. You're saying that.
Yeah, where I will, you know, take less in favor of somebody else getting more.
Let me ask you a question, just because this is something that's very personal to me. Yes, I own a car. Yes, I drive my kids around a lot. But my preferred mode of travel is public transportation.
Yes.
Are there ways, or do you already have ways, to reward people for not using their car?
So the answer is yes. So
great.
A couple of years ago, we took the platform that we had been building with Honda, and we worked with the city of LA. So I'm on the board for the LA Auto Show, again, volunteer thing, and I've been the head of the design challenge for the last couple of years. And one of the people on the board with me is, was a woman by the name of Salita Reynolds.
Sure.
Salita is the general manager of LA DOT.
Yep.
So we plugged in the city data into the platform, and we ran a hackathon at the LA Auto Show in 2017. Salita was one of our speakers, and she got up and presented and say, "This is all fantastic. You guys are, you know, I appreciate you guys being here. Excited to see what you're going to do. But just so you know, I would like cars to go away. You know, I don't want cars on the road. I want you guys to walk or take a bike. I want you on the bus.
Yep.
You know, I want you to take the train. It's healthier for you. It's healthier for the city. It's better for everybody. You know, and oh, by the way, good luck, you know, with the hackathon." You know, and I talked to Salita about what we're doing with the whole kind of loyalty points and rewards. She's like, "I don't like what you're doing with cars, but I would love to take what you're doing for public transportation. So if you can get incentivized people to worst case carpool or rideshare, that's good. If you can get them to take the bus or the train, because apparently we're not, you know, we built all this infrastructure in the city and it's not really, it's actually going in the wrong direction in terms of the usage, that would help me. And also, you know, more importantly, can we get, you know, people to bike or walk?" And LA is an interesting city because, you know, if you take away the cars, you got a big problem because the city was never designed around public transportation. And so all these retailers, you know, all of these office spaces, if you people can't get to all of these places, it will really, there'll be a lot of retailers just go out of business. So the car is one of the things that's been fascinating in this process for me, to just step back and think about. Only about 20% of the $5 trillion in commerce, retail commerce, consumer retail commerce every year is online. So about 80% is still brick and mortar retail. About 45% of the drives that people take are to go buy something. And less than 10% of people in the country take public transportation. So 90% of us drive to buy 80% of the $5 trillion in retail products. So the car is the ultimate shopping cart. It's the dumbest. Has the most potential. It's the, you know, it's the least Amazon-like. And so when you step back and think about it, it's like, wow, here's this really powerful tool. And what we've been doing, you know, if you kind of step back and say, oh, okay, with your loyalty points and rewards and behavior tied into brick and mortar retailer, we're connecting, we're kind of creating that digital framework or network between drivers and passengers and vehicles and retail.
I think, I mean, your background and going back to your thought process of operating from this from a behavioral standpoint, like that would always lead. Well, you take trying to do things and trying to influence people's behaviors. You add on top of that you can call it gamification or just kind of an incentive structure. Then you can change people's behaviors for the better or for the worse. And it seems like that's exactly what you're doing with the platform that you have. I mean, again, just a platform. Forget that you're doing it for Honda, or you could be doing it for LADOT.
That's right. And then, you know, we got this interesting opportunity with Honda. You know, we started with a passenger, and they said, "Hey, we're working on some stuff for the driver. Can you help us there as well?" Because the concept that you have a driver platform and a passenger platform doesn't make sense. You should have it for everybody in the car.
It should be connected.
Yes.
Ah, see, exactly. I'm getting it now.
So what we did is we built a storefront and, you know, using CarPlay and Android Auto for the head unit. So the difference in this case is that when you're, you know, in park, you can touch, but when you're in drive, you can use voice. And so what we did is we brought in a whole bunch of partners and we connected into a payment system. So when you're driving, you can ask your car to find new garage or street parking and you can pay ahead. We plugged in gas stations. So you can find gas stations by brand, location, price. And then when you pull up to the pump, you tell the car the pump number, and the car will talk to the pump and do your transaction for you, so you don't have to take your credit card out.
Yeah, it's. I think it's interesting that in this, not even connected, you know, specifically to connected travel, just in the connected car experience, that the element that you are heightening in your business model is the passenger, and which brings a very unique experience then to the car, because for the most part, it's always been how do we optimize the driving experience? How do we optimize the driving experience? And now yet you're focusing a little bit more on that passenger, which is pretty unique.
And what's interesting is, as you know from our conversation with Jeff Wardle about how, you know, how the design of the car has changed over the years from, you know, the outside of it, people cared more about it. Now people are more caring about the inside. This goes hand in hand with that, and about passenger comfort and everything being connected. So it's like, we talked to Jeff and he had said that, and now we have this company that's focusing on it. Like, that's clearly the future.
Although I hope not too much, because I still have that emotional connection to the exterior of the car. But Brian, look, I want to thank you sincerely for all the insight, for informing us of all the great things that you're doing with Connected Travel. We will certainly follow your progress and your success. And listeners, again, I will throw in check out the episode notes, and you could see some of the links on Connected Travel and some of the great things that they're doing.
You should put a good link to that app from the App Store as well on there.
Yes,
as well.
Hyper.
Because I'm signed up.
Hyperdrive.
I hope I get a free premium thing that, you know, because we're friends now.
Brian will come knock on your door and sing a happy birthday to you.
Excellent. Whatever it takes.
I thought I was getting points from your wife.
Yes, maybe. We'll see.
Whoa, where are we going with this combo now?
That's good. I don't know, but that was good. I like that.
All right. So listeners, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Wisco Weekly. As always, tune in next week as we end every episode. On behalf of me, Kelly, and Rudy, cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salud, kampai, mabruk, tutsins, gambe, yamas, to the customer experience.